to Black Light Mass Incarceration Show. I am your host, Sierra Cobb. Black Light Mass Incarceration Show is a space that is used to uplift the unheard voices of the criminal and social justice issues that many face today. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoy.
All my troubles began probably for me back in around 1980, I say, with the death of my mother in Louisiana. And little did I know that I had been traumatized by her death, watching her die from asthma. She had a fatal attack, and she passed away. And I came back up to Virginia to stay with my dad after my mother's death. And from that point on, you know, it seemed like it's just been a snowball road downhill. When I came back, over with my stay with my dad, you know, we was trying to build a relationship because I haven't been around my dad in a long time. So, you know, that was kind of strange and awkward for a moment until we started getting used to each other. And just then, you know, is when I got into this trouble when I turned 17, 18 years old. Before that, I had joined the military when I was in the 11th grade. At the age of 17, I joined the National Guards, and on a one-year delay entry program, which I supposed to have been leaving for basic training after my graduation. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I didn't get to that. I got incarcerated. But to get to the point of the incarceration part, that started my day changed. My whole life changed overnight for one day. Another individual, I won't mention his name for legal purposes, but he mentioned my name to the police where he was under investigation for a burglary and malicious wounding charge. And I had previously had a burglary against my stepmother for a domestic situation where my parents, where my stepmother and my dad was getting a divorce. Mm-hmm. So my stepmom was, you know, she got kind of reluctant of me being around. You know, she wanted to go on with her life. And I kind of understand that, but, you know, I didn't prove to the way that she had done it. You know, she was kicking me out and just starting arguments and stuff for no reason, trying to get me out of the house. And finally, after being kicked out about 2-3 times, I said, well, I'm just go ahead and stay out. I went to stay with my friend named Jerome Campbell and his family. And I asked her, could I come over and get my personal things? Because, like I said, I was in the National Guard and I was in the NJRTC in high school. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't let me come and get my things, so I broke in and I took my belongings. And for spite, I took some of her stuff as well. You know, I eventually went on and just copped to that offense because they was trying to implicate my father as being the perpetrator in that incident because him and her was going through a divorce, so they was looking at him as a suspect. So, you know, I didn't want my dad to be involved in that, so I just stepped up to the plate and took the responsibility for my actions. Well, anyway, when this guy had implicated me into this crime because he knew I had this burglary pending against me, it kind of threw the spotlight on me, and these people automatically thought, well, hey, this guy got a burglary pending against him. He's a person of interest. We need to look at the situation. And once I got downtown, you know, I was put in the interrogation room for like 2-3 hours. It's cold. I didn't have no but a pair of shorts on and a tank top. You know, I was 18 years old, you know, and a pair of sneakers. So I waited in there for hours, and then they finally came in there and started talking to me. And, you know, I stayed in the interrogation room for about 10 hours total, and while being questioned by 7 different detectives. And with, you know, they have these techniques that they use on you that I wasn't aware of. You know, they say that ignorance is not an excuse of the law, but it is. You know, if you don't know, you don't know.
You don't.
You know, I was young and I was dumb. Say again.
I said, yeah, you do. A lot of people don't know the law. And I think that's the reason why we all get caught up.
And yes, ma'am. And, you know, if it's so important, then, you know, why are they teaching it in the school? You know,
right.
Like they do regular curriculum, if it's so important, that's something you need to know. But to get back to the story, they was using these techniques of, you know, manipulation and threats and the coercion and the distress, and I mentally broke down, you know, and whatever they said, I basically like agreed to it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I did this. I did that, you know, and for when I left out of the interrogation room, I had like 5 burglary charges, 3 malicious woundings, sexual assault charges, assault and battery, grand larceny, and all these other charges that I had. So upon receiving my lawyer, which was a couple of days later, maybe a week later, I was telling him, I said, listen, man, I'm not guilty. I said, these people put pressure on me. And, you know, I told him whatever they wanted to hear. You know, and he was like, well, I'm going to see what I can do. Mm-hmm. But the whole time, my lawyer never done nothing to help me. You know, he didn't do a motion for discovery. He didn't do an investigation. And all of these crimes that I was charged with was crimes that already happened months before I was arrested. So they was like, you know, just cases that was cold cases that was open. They had nobody. And when I came along, they put the cases on me. You know, I hadn't been identified in none of these crimes. They had my DNA. So they could have matched my DNA to the sexual assault victims and everything. There was no certificate analysis in my case. There's no hospital records of the victims in the court record. There's no forensic evidence of any kind or physical evidence. And the only thing that the reason why I'm in prison is because I pleaded guilty. That is the absolute only reason why I'm in prison.
So,
you know, and I had become.
Hold on 1 second. So did you go to trial or you just took a plea deal?
No, I didn't even take a plea deal. The plea was just a plea of guilty for leniency on the court on me. You know, I didn't even take it for a certain amount of time.
So there was no plea deal and no trial.
No, no trial, no plea deal.
Wow, I ain't never heard nothing like that. Virginia's different, yeah. But I ain't never heard nothing like that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I pled guilty, and the next thing you know, I got life plus 150 years. But to backtrack a little bit before that, my lawyer, like I said, he didn't do anything to try to assist me in my case. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I know that 101 for a lawyer is to file a motion for a discovery to see what kind of evidence that the defense has, you know. But from day one, this guy was getting me to plead guilty based on the confession from the interrogation. He was like, look, I don't really see you getting around with it, getting around this confession. The best thing for you to do, Mr. Bryan, I think, is to ask the court for leniency and plead guilty, because if you don't, the prosecutor attorney is pushing for life sentences on all your charges. You know, so I'm like, I don't know. You know, I know that the midnight burglaries carry life sentence. Mm-hmm. And sexual assault carries life sentence by itself, too. So I was facing multiple life sentences, which I knew that. But, you know, I didn't know that this guy didn't do nothing on his end. You know, he was just selling me a dream, you know, to go in there. And basically, I became a witness against myself. And I helped the prosecution solidify all these cases and close all these cases, you know, where there's no evidence and nothing. And now, decades later, I can't even go back and really, I can't go back and prove my innocence because there's no evidence in the case. You know, being that the evidence never brought up, the evidence all been destroyed in my case. The only thing that I can go back to prove is the wrongful conviction itself, you know, and the constitutional violations of the illegal search and seizure without a warrant. You know, they took my blood and all this type of stuff. They didn't have a warrant or search order or court order, whatever. And they did a lot of violation. And also the judge that I had that was superseding my case was being cited by the NAACP, the American Bar Association, because he was a member of the James River Country Club, which discriminates against black members, didn't have any black members. So at this time, it was Senator Robert C. Scott was the senator of Virginia, and this judge was up for reappointment. Mm-hmm. And he refused to reappointment. He refused to sponsor him for reappointment because he was a part of this club. Now, we know today if that type of stuff was going on, that a judge couldn't sit on the panel and reside as a judge. You know what I'm saying? He had to recluse himself.
Right.
Because that's automatic being biased. And just come to find out, I do my little research, that Virginia did not have any protocols in place back in the 80s that didn't allow a judge to do these things. And then when the case came up about this judge and another judge named Curran, they finally, the American Bar Association said that they was going to implement a law saying that it was invidious discrimination, so that they couldn't have judges serving on the bench that was involved in or participating in type of organizations like that. You know, so, you know, obviously the judge was biased against me as well, because he made a statement at when I went to trial, which wasn't a trial, but I was at my trial hearing, and he asked my lawyer and he asked the prosecutor attorney, did they see anything wrong with the video from the interrogation, which supposed to have been the confession? And both of them said, no, sir. And he said, oh, that's from a legal standpoint. You know, so he never even viewed the videotape.
Right.
So how can you, you know, that's, you're a judge. You're superseding the case. You're supposed to make sure that I wasn't under duress, under any kind of pressure that you could see on the video. He never viewed the video. So everything just slipped through the crack. And unfortunately, you know, I was on the receiving end of all this. And at the time, I didn't know nothing about the law. And this is the result of that.
So how long did you actually get?
Well, how long? I got a life sentence plus 150 years.
And this is happening when? The 80s?
Yeah, 1988.
Have you tried to reach out to the Innocence Project?
Yes, I have. But the main problem that I have in my case, there's no evidence in the case. So they basically saying that they is nothing. See, a lot of them innocent, a lot of people don't know, a lot of them innocent projects, they function on doing DNA testing.
They do.
You know, that's their whole body of their case. Mm-hmm. And when they have to do a lot of litigating, they don't have the time and resources to take individual cases and go to court fighting on an individual base. You know, they like to have the DNA, do the DNA testing, and then they can file for actual innocence or so forth back directly to the court. But being that my case don't consist of any evidence, I can't have any DNA testing done because there's no evidence there. And there's no record and there's no certificate of analysis or nothing that pertains to the sexual assault that's in the record. There's nothing. Absolutely nothing.
So you've had absolutely nobody that can help you, basically, is what you're saying, right? Have you reached out to anybody else, or you just reached out to the Innocence Project?
Yeah. I didn't reach out to multiple UVA Innocent Project, the Carduza Innocent Project out of New York with Peter J. Newfield, Robert Shapiro, the one in D.C., the National Capital Region Innocent Project, and Centurion Ministries, a whole lot of them, and I got the same answer. I just recently reached out to the Equal Justice Initiative, which is out of Georgia, and another one in Chicago called the Exoneration Project. But I haven't quite got definitive answers for them yet. They are looking into the situation, but they haven't said they was going to take my case to anything yet. They're just going through the preliminary stages of that. But, you know, my case is old. It's over. It's 36 years old, so it's very hard to get people to look into it, because the first thing they think of, they think, well, this guy, you pleaded guilty. You know what I'm saying? Okay, yes, that's true. I did plead guilty. I can't take and undo that. But it was the circumstances that caused me to plead guilty. I didn't plead guilty because I was guilty.
Right.
I pleaded guilty because I was basically forced and coerced to plead guilty. You know,
and
I didn't think that I had any other. Yeah.
A lot of people are. I didn't know I had any. To plead guilty when they're not, especially when you're under duress and you've been in an interrogation room and they play all these mind games with you for hours and hours. And so they basically, you know, trick your mind into you, you know, saying that you did something that you didn't do. It happens all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's a strange thing about it, because it does happen all the time. But for some reason, that when they're faced with that actual reality, a lot of people turn blind eye to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't understand why. You know, I be telling them, you know, look, I'm innocent. Look into the case. You know, that's all you have to do. If you look into the case, you will see that all this stuff that I'm saying is relevant. You know, and that it is the reason why I led to my wrongful conviction, you know, of an innocent man. You know, I was doing good. I was getting ready to graduate. Like I said, I was already in the military. You know, I was just waiting to go to basic training. My life changed overnight. You know, I was thrown into like a hurricane or a tornado, and there was nothing I can do but ride the storm out, you know, and this is where I'm at today.
So tell me how how do you handle this? Because that's a lot to digest, to be convicted of several crimes that you had absolutely nothing to do with, and then trying to get help and people saying they can't help you because, you know, it's been so long and there's evidence that's destroyed. So how do you handle that? Like, how do you prepare yourself each day?
That's a good question, right? And one of the best things that helped me so far is my spirituality. I study a lot of philosophy. And for some reason, philosophy seems to click with me and gives me that logical type of thinking. You know, it keeps me rational and it keeps me from being bitter. You know, that's hard to stay not bitter and angry, mm-hmm. and wanting for revenge for the individuals involved in my downfall. You know, and while I was downfalling, the detectives on the other end, they was getting promotions and all these other things off of my back, you know, and it wasn't the truth. And they knew it wasn't the truth.
Right.
Yeah. And they knew because they had the evidence. You know, if I was guilty of these sexual assaults and all this stuff, where's the certificates of analysis? Why wouldn't you file that evidence before a trial, knowing that if you didn't file it before a trial, it'd become inadmissible?
Right.
You see, all that stuff, yeah, it doesn't make sense. And like I said, I didn't know at the time. And I didn't have anybody that was basically in my corner trying to enlighten me to what was going on. And, you know, everything that I have learned up to this point, basically I have learned since being in prison by going to the law library and so forth. But, you know, it's hard. It's hard every day waking up and seeing people go home on a daily basis and seeing cases on TV that get overturned. People look into their case and, you know, see that these people are telling the truth. They was innocent. And, you know, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, I don't know if it's destiny or whatever the case is, but it seems like I just can't get any help. I just can't get anybody to look at my case. It's like being in a nightmare and you can't wake up.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I get that. Yeah.
You know, you're like, you know, you're like, you're having one of those dreams and you're trying to scream, but you can't scream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like one of those nightmares. And I deal with it best I can. Every day is a struggle, you know, But somehow I have made it this far. You know, I thank my family for sticking by me. You know, they don't know much about the law or anything like that, but they have been giving me plenty of moral support, you know, and financial support while I've been incarcerated. So I applaud them and thank them for that, you know. And I thank God, you know, for giving me the strength to make it through these trials and tribulations, you know. And hopefully one day somebody, I hope, that will hear this story and we have some kind of compassion or, you know, sympathy, empathy, whatever the case may be, to say, hey, look, maybe it's just something we need to look at. What do I have to lie about? I didn't done the time. I didn't done 36 years of my life in prison. I don't need to stick to the story of my innocence or guilt, you know, because on the other hand, I done the time, you right. know.
You've done I'm over innocent, the time.
So I'm going to keep, yeah, you know, so I'm going to keep fighting just based on that right there alone. Only thing I'm searching for is my freedom. I want to be exonerated. I can't be exonerated because there's no evidence in the case. But my case conviction can be thrown out, you know, in sufficient evidence and so forth, plus the constitutional violations on top of that.
Right.
But I have done, you know, I have accomplished a lot. Even, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with a lotus plant. A lotus plant grows from the mud. And I kind of compare that analogy with me, my life, because my life has been muddy. And, you know, and it has been some good things that came out of my life. You know, I published a book. It's called The Uncomplimentous. It's a poetry book. Just came out in 2022. If somebody want to publish it, or I mean, if somebody want to buy the book or anything, they can go to Amazon or any major book store online and purchase that book. It's very enlightening and will give them a picture of who I am as well, because a lot of the poetry in it is my feelings throughout the decades of being incarcerated, you know, a lot of expressions, a lot of me is in the book, you know, and it's real and it's genuine.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you've been incarcerated for a very long time. If you feel comfortable, like, what things have you seen, like, as far as where incarceration was, the system was in the 80s to where the system is now?
Well, I noticed one big difference, like in inside the prison. You know, when I came in, they had a lot of activities. They had a lot of programs for guys. You know, a lot of things that would keep you busy. You know, to me today, the prison system is all about punishment. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. From looking and seeing that a lot of the individuals that come in prison, a lot of these guys are not even criminals. Right. You know what I'm saying? These guys are getting got caught up in drugs. They got caught up in, domestic incidents with their families and relatives or you know, bad influence, you know, gang participation. You know, but these guys are not like guys that's born to be criminals. You know, they made mistakes and they've been thrown in prison. And, you know, and here you kind of get thrown away because society has a thing as is, you know, they don't want to face the fact that these individuals come from their society. They come from your neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So if the problem, if these individuals coming from your community, it is not the individuals with the problem, it's the community with the problem. But they turn a blind eye to that, and they just thinking that they take the individual and throw him away, that they're solving the problem. No, you're not. You have to fix the problems in the community, you know, to you keep do. Others from coming down that same path. And, you know, once you get in here, it's a different story because everything in here is about, you know, to me, prison is not really a place of rehabilitation anymore. I think more is about a place of putting people away for punishment. You know, and if you get rehabilitated, it's more of a personal, individual thing that you do. You know what I'm saying?
It's something you do on your own.
They give you the little. Exactly. It's something that you have to strive to do to your own. You know, you have to identify if you do have a drug problem or whatever the problem may be, you have to identify that for yourself and approach that. Use the means that's available to approach that and address that issue. You know, but there's nobody really around that's trying to diagnose you and analyze you and to find out what's going on and the things that you need to make you a better person. You really have to do that for yourself, you know. But that just speaking for me, that just my point of view and what I had to do to make it through prison system. You know, it was much different when I came through. A lot of things was much rougher. You know, they didn't have the PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and all these other things that kind of protect inmates from the things that I was subjected to, you know. So it's a different world, you know. But basically, that's the best I can say as far as that.
Right. So if, you know, please tell people where you are. I mean, you never know who's listening, you know, who might be able to actually help you, because I always believe there's help. You know what I'm saying? I always believe when somebody is wronged, that eventually it will be right because God sees all and knows all. And, you know, sometimes we might not see the end of the light, but you never know. Any time, you know, somebody could be like, well, this is something I want to take on and let me see what I could do. So, you know, let people know where you are, you know, just in case they want to reach out, just in case they do want to help. I mean, because I always believe that there's somebody out there who, you know, will take on that task because it takes somebody who's tenacious to take on a task like that, you know, especially knowing that there's no evidence. But God always puts the right people in your life at the right time.
Yes, that's very true. That's just like the, having the opportunity of doing this. I see it as a blessing, you know, because, obviously it's going to lead to something. I don't know what it's going to lead to, but I feel like that it wouldn't have came my way if it wasn't necessary. So, or serve a purpose. So I believe that, yes, it will serve a purpose. If anybody want to reach me out there, my name is Michael Wang Bryant. I'm presently incarcerated in the state of Virginia in the Green Rock Correctional Center. My state number is 1066161. And I'm hoping that somebody out there will hear this story and that will have some remorse, you know, some compassion, whatever the case is, you know, that they would say that it's worthy of looking into. You know, that's all I ask for, you know, just somebody to look into it. And I guarantee you, once they look into it, they're going to see that that my case is a tragedy. You know, it's something that should not have happened, but did, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the the dark vast of what Black Americans go through in America, is being accused of a crime that you did not commit and then having to serve the consequences of something that you did not commit. And in Michael's case, he's serving life plus how many years, you say?
150 years.
Okay. Which to me, I never will understand. Why are we giving people life, two life terms, when it's not even the reality that somebody can even serve that time? And when I went to do research, because I wanted to know why, you know, judges are giving people that amount of time, knowing in reality they can't serve that. And they say it's because, you know, just in case somebody overturns a life sentence, they can overturn one, but they can't overturn two. But then my thing is, you never know if that person actually committed that crime, because we have a system that has never been fair to people that are Black and brown and poor. Unless you have money or unless you are of a different culture, you have absolutely no chance of having anything that is fair and just. And so America has to take responsibility for the environment that they have created. They have created an environment of crime. They have created an environment of injustice against many people and many cultures. And so it takes so much to undo what has been done for 400 or 500 years now. And this is why I do what I do. This is why we have Black Light, for people to tell their story, because a lot of people who aren't even involved in the criminal justice system don't understand what people go through, what other cultures go through when we're out here in America. And your story is a vast example of what many people go through, have been incarcerated for a crime they didn't commit. My husband's one of them. He's also incarcerated for a crime he didn't commit, was falsely accused. And so this is what we have to deal with. And it's important that we try to do what we can to undo the harm that has been done to people in the community, because we're taking away all communities now. Like, incarceration is literally taking children, they're taking young people, they're taking middle-aged people, and they're taking elderly people. So now we actually have like a whole community incarcerated for what? And then not only are you dragging the person that's incarcerated, but you're slaving their family on top of that, because they have to take care of the person that's incarcerated. I know firsthand. So this is why we created this space, for people to tell their story, for people who are incarcerated to be uplifted, and for people to understand what people go through. So, you know, I thank you for your story.
Hey, I'd like to say one last thing. I said, well, you know, for me, like, one of the biggest things is that it's carrying that burden, you know, because, you know, even though I have been expressing my innocence since I've been incarcerated, you know, everybody said, well, you know, everybody's incarcerated says they're innocent and so forth. And it aches me to my soul, because I know that is a true saying, you know, because a lot of people do say that. And because of that, everybody is looked to as being lying. You know, they're not telling the truth. You're trying to beat the system, so forth. And that burden is something that I have to tote every single day. I mean, the label of being a rapist or a burglar or somebody that goes around and maliciously unleash violence on innocent people for no reason. You know, even when the counselors sometimes look at me or the other COs, they're not saying it, but I know in the back of their mind that they're looking at me, hey, this guy, I can't trust him. There's no telling what he might do. You know what I'm saying? At any given time, you know, he's unpredictable. And I didn't get to the point where, you know, I didn't fail in here sometime mentally, to the point where, as you know, listen, okay, you win. Whoever you say I am, that's who I am. You know what I'm saying? Because I can't convince you otherwise. And you know, even if I get my case overturned and, you know, and get out of here, that is still, them stains and all this drama and trauma that I've been through is going to still be there. It's not going to go away. Mm-hmm. And it can't be undone. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's something that I'm gonna have to learn to continue to cope and live with, no matter what the outcome is on the other side.
Yes, I definitely agree. One thing I do want you to understand is that you aren't what people say you are. You are what God says you are, because only God can be the one that label you. Human opinions don't matter. So always keep that in your heart. No matter what people think or say of you because of, you know, they're looking at supposedly the crime that you committed, that doesn't matter, because you are a child of God. You are God's son, and you are what God says you are. You understand what I'm saying? So always remember that.
Yes, ma'am.
And you know, I'm sorry that they have taken your, I mean, they've literally taken your life away from you for no absolutely reason and left you in a situation where it's really hard for you to gain your freedom. But we know God can do all, he sees all, you know, he can change anything around at any time with a snap of a finger. So I, you know, I'm praying every day that he sends you the help that you need, to relieve you from that wrong. 'Cause you have been wronged. You have definitely been wronged,
yes, ma'am,
by the system.
I like to also like to give some thanks to a couple of individuals that have been helping me throughout my incarceration, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's a guy named Lamus Bay. He's the guy I've been serving time with. He's been my support system, and I've been his support system, you know, since we've been incarcerated. We've known each other, and he's been there for me. I like to thank my family for their support, my relatives that's been there for me. And a longtime friend that I knew when I was on the street, her name was Sharon Elizabeth Tello. I haven't heard from her since I've been incarcerated. And but we didn't leave each other on bad terms. We was good friends, you know. I knew her for a while, quite a while, and I haven't been in touch with her. I just hope that that she's happy wherever she's at, you know, and at peace or whatever the case may be. And I hope that whoever she's with, that she's getting that love and support that I wish I was out there to give her, you know, because, you know, we really had something special. But due to my incarceration, that was brought to an abrupt end as well. And I just like to thank all the listeners out there. And like I said, I hope somebody they'll be affected by my story and just feel like it's something they need to do and look into, you know. Yeah. And I thank you most of all for giving me the opportunity to tell my story. I never had, since I've been locked up in 36 years, I never had this opportunity. So I'm feeling real good right now. It's like 1,000 pounds off my back, you know, load, because now I get to tell the world my side of the story, you know, and that's a good feeling, you know.
Well, you're welcome. That's exactly why we created Black Light, was to let people tell their side of the story, because their side of the story is never told. The only side you ever hear is what the prosecution wants people to hear. It's never the person who has actually been accused of the crime, their side of the story. So this is why we created Black Light, for people to be able to express that and have other people actually understand and get a, you know, a glimpse into the person that's being accused of something, whether they did or didn't do it. I mean, everybody that's been on Black Light has not been innocent. There have been people that have done it, but they also have been remorseful and understand and take accountability for their actions. And that's what we're here for, whether you're innocent or whether you've done it. You know, we're just here to support and have you share your story, hopefully to touch other people, hopefully to touch this young generation that just seems like, you know, they're kind of out of hand, trying to keep them away from the system. So, yeah, we thank you so much, Michael, for everything. Is there any last words you want to leave?
I like to say one thing to a lot of people that, like, it's kind of based on what you just said about, you know, it's really not a matter whether you innocent or guilty, because if you're incarcerated, you definitely, if you're guilty, you're paying for a price. You know, you're doing your time, you're serving your sentence. So if you're innocent, then it's a tragedy of justice. Mm-hmm. You know, in any case, it's something that people need to look at. And, you know, I noticed one thing that, you know, for some reason that when it comes to the justice system just has a bad, it leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that nobody really wants to address. You know, it's like, it was like slavery. You know, when you mention slavery, nobody wants to talk about slavery in America, you know, and it's the same thing with incarceration. And the thing is that if you sentence this person to prison to serve their time for the crime they committed, if they served their time, then they paid their price, they paid their debt. Then give them a second chance to go on with their life with all these other stipulations that you put on the back of that to make their life a living hell. You know what I'm saying? They paid their price. And it used to be like that, you know, decades and decades ago. You know, you come to prison, you serve your time, you get out, and you go back to being living your life. You know what I'm saying? Now, you know, you get out, and I see a lot of guys that get out, and they have these chains. You know, it's like having a ball and a chain attached to your ankle, because you're still dragging that load with you.
Yep, you're still,
you know,
that
you
label.
Can't seem to, you know, you see, you can't get rid of prison. You can't get it off you. And that's because the justice system don't want it to get off you. You know what I'm saying? It's like you can't be, you're incorrigible. You know, you can't be fixed. You can't be a better person. You know, you're going to be like, you're born a criminal. Nobody's born a criminal. People come to be criminals because of their environment, you know? Mm-hmm. And they pick up bad habits, you know. But I don't know. Society, I think, has to take some responsibility on bringing people. When you send people away to get punished and pay their debt, then you have to also be willing to accept them back into the community before they, as if they were, as if they never left. You know what I'm saying? They paid the debt. Welcome them back in the community.
That's true. You know? I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, like some of the things that I see that goes on in here. But it is what it is, you know. I thank you and I appreciate it. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to view these podcasts, how do they go about seeing them?
We are on every major streaming platform. So wherever people get their podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Google, we're on everything. And then we also have a YouTube page at Black Light Mass Incarceration Show. You can just Google it and everything will come up. But we're on every major streaming platform. So you just Google Black Light Mass Incarceration Show and it'll come up on, you know, whatever you want to listen to, whether it's YouTube, Apple, Spotify, you can even listen to it on your computer. We're everywhere. So you can find us everywhere. Just Google. That's all.
Okay, Google Black Light
Mass Incarceration
Show. Mass Incarceration
Show. Mm-hmm.
Show. Mass Incarceration Show.
Yep.
Yep. No, say that in again.
Black Light Mass Incarceration Show.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay, and thank you, and I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Michael. Take care. Keep your head up.
Okay, you too, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right, family. That one was a little heavy. I'm not going to lie. That one was a lot of heavy. You know, I've done a lot of interviews with people that are incarcerated. Some are guilty. Some aren't. But to hear somebody say that they were convicted of a crime with absolutely no evidence, no witnesses, no forensics, you know, the lawyer didn't get the motion of discovery, no trial, no plea deal. And for him to be incarcerated for 30 something years and now all the evidence is destroyed and that he can't get help because I don't know what the reason is. But this is what pushes me to go be a lawyer so that maybe I could be that difference maker, because it is so hard for me to hear people say that they can't find help. And I know firsthand, because it's the same way with me and my husband. His is not as bad as Michael's. You know, he has been falsely accused of something he didn't do, and the evidence does not match that. But it's hard when you know you're innocent and you know deep down in your soul that you are, and you're trying to get somebody to help you and you can't get help for one reason or the other, whether people just don't like dealing with plea deals, whether you have destroyed evidence, whether you have a case that doesn't have DNA, because that's what I'm not lagging on the Innocence Project, but that's really all they handle is DNA cases. And so it leaves a lot of people in a gray area where they're just helpless unless they're in a prison with somebody who was good with the law. Don't get me wrong. A lot of people who are incarcerated because they have nothing but time on their hands are wonderful at law. Don't have to go to law school, no nothing. They sit in there and they learn that law day in and day out. And I have met and interviewed a few people that are like that. I know one guy in New York, his name is George, and he is wonderful at law. You know what I mean? Because he took that time to learn the law and also help get other people out. He eventually got out, but then now he's on to help other people who have been wrongfully convicted get out. And so I think it's important that we keep uplifting our guys incarcerated to start learning the law, because they also can be an outlet to help people get out, especially if you can't find outside help. And so, but this is what we go through on an everyday basis for a lot of people. Their life is snatched away from them. They're caught up in this web of a system that leaves you a lot of times with absolutely no way of relief. Tim is another one. Tim Wright, he's been on here a lot of times. He's another one that is caught in this web of having to have the smoking gun to get him out. And he was charged with, well, I think he got 60 years. Michael has life plus 130. My husband, you know, thank the Lord, isn't as bad, but he got 25 to 32 years. And so we're snatching people's lives away for what? Like, for what? I couldn't be a prosecutor or judge and lay down knowing that I have possibly, without doing all of my due diligence to ensure that the person that I'm accusing of this crime really committed this crime beyond a reasonable doubt. I want to keep iterating that, because the state has the burden of proof to prove that you have committed what they are accusing you of beyond a reasonable doubt. That means you can't have not a doubt in your mind that that person committed that crime. And if you have the slightest doubt, they're not supposed to be guilty, but the state gets off easy because you have where, in his case, he was pressured and tortured and coerced into pleading guilty. And so that gives the state a free pass to just give people all this asinine amount of time. And this is crazy. And now it's like I said before, talking to Michael, it is taking our communities, y'all. Like, do y'all not understand that incarceration is taking the communities? We're taking babies. We're taking middle age. We're taking elderly people and warehousing them. For what reason? For free labor? Because that's really all it is. If y'all go Google corporations that hire or that are are part of the prison industrial complex, you would be surprised the number of corporations that are part of that. Walmart, McDonald's, I could go on. Go Google it, you'll see it. So our money goes to them for them to get free labor off of people that's incarcerated. Like, this is not right. I can't digest this. I don't think I could ever digest that, because that is just, I don't know. It's just mind blowing, y'all. Like, I'm lost for words, because every time I hear a story like this, it resonates in my soul and it fires me to a different level of really trying to do what I can to help people. And it's got to be just more than me. You have other organizations that are really out there, boots on the ground, trying to help people. But we got to do better. We got to do better to keep our community together, because we're supposed to be a community. We're not supposed to be warehoused in a metal facility and continuously tearing down the people that are in there. And then if they do get out, they really don't have any type of reentry. Then they have this label, as he was speaking on. They have a label that they have to carry around. So it is like a ball and chain. You can't never release that ball and chain. And then a lot of people come home with what they call post-incarceration syndrome. So incarceration does not rehabilitate anybody. And I can't stand to hear people say, oh, well, you did the time. You did the crime. You don't know who did the crime. You really don't. Unless you had hardcore evidence that that person committed the crime, you can't say that. And for people to just throw people away like people don't make mistakes. Nobody is better than anybody. Everybody has done something they were not supposed to do, whether they got caught or not. There is not a one saint walking on this earth that has not done something that they should have not done. So for us to just turn a blind eye for the things that we've done and look at these people who are incarcerated and down them because they're incarcerated and because they've been labeled by the state, it's crazy. This is what we have to move away from, is labeling people and throwing people away, because nobody is perfect. As you see, politicians aren't perfect. You see, prosecutors aren't perfect. Defense attorneys aren't perfect. All these high-powered people that we think are perfect are not perfect, and is starting to fall, and we're starting to see that as a society. So why are we labeling other people and segregating people like they're not a part of the whole system? This is why, another reason why it's important to teach our children the law. It is very important that everybody understands the law. It's very important for people. I wouldn't even depend on an attorney sometimes, because you never know if their heart is into it to really help you, or if their heart is into it just for the money and you're a client to them. I aim to be an attorney that do this from the bottom of my heart and from my soul to help people, because I'm tired of seeing people go through situations, you know what I mean, and getting in situations where they have all this time, especially if they didn't do the crime. And to even help the ones that did the crime, to get down to the root cause of why they did this, because like he said, nobody's born a criminal. unless you have like a chemical imbalance that you was born with, and sometimes you just can't control that impulse decision. But other than that, really trying to understand and understand the resources and the culture that the person came from to get people to understand this is maybe why they committed that crime. Anyway, family, I could go on for hours and days about this. I really hope that you take his story. Please share his story because he needs help. I know that there's somebody out there that's willing to help Michael gain his freedom. You can't tell me there's not a person out there that will not help Michael gain his freedom. Even if it takes the time that I get done with law school, I will do what I can to try to help because he needs help. He deserves freedom. He does not deserve life plus 130 some years. Y'all stay up, stay blessed, stay out the way of the system if you can as much as possible. Until the next time, Black Light family, take care and have a good one. Peace.